Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Press and go, just press and go.
That's our motto.
Life's a show when you just press and go.
No, literally, that's our 2024 motto.
Just press and go.
We don't have time for glue. We need to just press and go.
Stop with the glue. Glue is so 2002.
Wow.
We're talking about impress, press on falsies, and press on manicure. The Impress Press-On Falsies are these lashes that require zero glue. They have a variety of different styles. I personally am a fan of the natural and also the wispies. I like applying a few just to the corner of my eyes. And honestly, this is faster for me than applying mascara. It is so quick. I gotta also tell you the falsies, one thing I forgot to mention, they're the underlash. It's underneath the lash. So they look super, super realistic. No glue, just press and go.
Speaking of press and go, let's talk about the Impress No Glue Manis that I am obsessed with. If you follow me, you know that I am in my press-on era right now because I do not have time to sit in the chair at the salon like many of you for like 2 hours. And that's fine because thanks to Impress, you can have a super fabulous mani in seconds. You don't have to apply any glue. They come in all different styles. And the Impress Manicure has a patented super hold adhesive for up to 7 days.
If you want to try the no glue mani or press on falsies from Impress that won't damage your nails or lashes, just go to Impress. That's impressbeauty.com/Los Angeles. And then use our code Los Angeles to check out for 25% off Impress Manicure and Press-On Falsies.
Hi, Kirby.
Hi, Sarah.
Welcome to Los Angeles. Happy Friday. Happy Friday. What day is it? Every day is Friday if you're stuck at home and you believe in it.
Oh, my God. That could be on our merch. Every day is Friday in Los Angeles.
Woo! And then we could do a collab with Summer Friday.
Oh, dreams. Dreams come true, baby. Happy Friday, our little glamjulinos. I feel like I'm a geriatric grandma when I talk to y'all. It's like,
why?
I don't know. The people that listen to this podcast are definitely at least our age based on the demographics that we receive from Acast. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just old at heart. Some people are young at heart. I'm an old.
But you're going to be a great grandma one day. That's why.
I am. I'm going to be a fucking boss grandma. I'm going to be hot and sassy.
You're going to have your Jocono facelift and...
Oh my God. Oh my God. Wait, Sarah.
Oh yeah, we need to talk about this.
We need to talk about this. Y'all, the reason I even decided I was getting a facelift at 45... The woman that got it is a Los Angeles listener. I went on Dr. Jocono's Instagram page, found this woman's post, and shared it to my Instagram. And that's when everyone started losing their crap and was like, oh my God, I need this immediately. She's like in her 40s and she literally looks mid-20s. She looks amazing. And she sent us on the Instagram, on the Los Angeles Instagram, she sent us her post from Jocono and was like, hi, it's me, a Los Angeles listener. And I honestly, my jaw dropped. I felt like a celebrity was following us.
I know. So it was, you know, in our requests inbox. And then when I opened it, I immediately screenshot it and sent it to Kirby. And I was like, oh my God, look who's in our inbox.
The woman. It is the woman. Anyways, yeah, I'll have my Jocono facelift and look like a million effing dollars. That'll be my second one at that point.
I'm getting one at
40 and one at 70, Jane Fonda. Yeah.
You guys will be best buds by then. Okay, so who do we have on the pod today, Curbs?
Y'all, Y'all, we have the cutest human being of all time. Not even cute, just cool. Fun, vivacious.
Everything I wish I was when I was her age.
So she's 10 years younger than us, so we really are her grandmas. No, just kidding. But it's Barbie Ferreira. So I'm guessing if you listen to this podcast, you know who Barbie Ferreira is. If you do not, Barbie is a model and she's an actress and the current face of Becca Cosmetics. Barbie made headlines with her Aerie campaign in 2016 and soon very quickly became the face of the body positivity movement. She made her TV debut last year in HBO's Euphoria as Kat, and she is phenomenal and looks so badass, has the coolest makeup, coolest outfits, funnest storyline, like just really cool stuff happening on that show. And she will actually appear in her feature film debut called Unpregnant on HBO Max, TBD on when that launches. But obviously, working with Becca, we wanted her to come on the pod. And she so graciously just got on a good old Zoom call with us.
Obliged.
And was wearing her glasses and pajamas and, you know.
Just talking about like her roommate. She's got a roommate. Yep. How much she like has loved living in LA because she's only been here for a couple years. It was just like,
yeah,
she was just so real. A down ass chick.
After we got off this interview, Sarah and I talked about how we felt this was truly one of the best interviews we've both ever had in our careers. Just because she wasn't afraid to go there and really talk about things that were relevant to not only what our listeners care about, but what's happening in the world in terms of beauty, fashion, social media, and things like that. Oftentimes with brand ambassadors, they are very, very put together. They have their talking points. They've been prepped out the wazoo. So, you know, you can barely get an authentic soundbite out of them without it sounding like a marketing conversation. And this was not the case with Barbie. There wasn't even a Becca representative on the call. Like, it was just her being herself.
I feel like that's just a testament too for Becca, like as a brand, because what even when they collaborated with Chrissy Teigen, it was very much the same way. Like, they let Chrissy do Chrissy, and you know, we all got some amazing quotes from all of our interviews with Chrissy. So yeah, I have like so much respect for Becca, and obviously these people that they tap to work with them are all just like, not only are they incredible and, you know, speak out on social issues and stuff like that too, but like are just true beauty fans.
Agreed.
So
they actually care. They wear makeup. They like experimenting with it. It's not something new for them because they're getting paid money.
Which you would think is like, you know, easy in the beauty industry, but you would be surprised with these ambassadors that people, brands pick. You're like, I don't actually think you know what you're talking about at all.
Like, the only person I have really interviewed outside of Barbie that seems to just really understand what the hell's going on is Jennifer Aniston. Like, that bee knows a thing or two about, like, not just skincare, but treatments and, you know, PRP, like... She was like, yeah. Should I be getting PRP right now? I mean, so it's always exciting when somebody that you're interviewing, especially when it is tied to a brand like this, she's not shoving the brand down your throat and also is passionate about beauty, because this is a beauty podcast. That's what we want from our guests. So please enjoy this episode with Barbie. You guys know where to find her on Instagram, but if you enjoy her interview, give her a follow. Follow Becca Cosmetics to hear more about what she's doing with them. And of course, follow us. It's Los Angeles Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Join our Facebook group and find us on our website, www.losangeles.com. And we will talk to you on Tuesday.
Wait, that's wrong. Losangelespod.com.
Oh, did I just say just losangeles.com?
Yeah.
Whoops, it's losangelespod.com, and you guys know that because I've said it 100 times at this point. All right, we'll talk to you next week.
I cannot believe we have Barbie on our freaking podcast.
I know, this is a major moment for us. So if we're a little giggly, please excuse us.
I am so excited to be on here. I love going on podcasts, and especially good ones. I just love to talk, and you know, I listen to podcasts all day. So it's honestly so exciting for me. I'm like, the podcast world.
What's your astrological sign?
Oh, I'm a Sagittarius. I'm an Aries rising. I am an Aquarius moon.
Yeah. Oh my God, that makes so much sense. Wait, so you have a lot of fire in your chart. You're fiery. I love it.
I'm very fiery. And it's been an issue that I've been I've been acknowledging within myself about being a Sagittarius. I think that comes with a lot of things. I think Sagittariuses are like the accumulation of all the signs in one. So we just tend to be chaotic.
Oh my God, but in love the best it. Way. Chaotic good. Chaotic good is the key word there. Love it.
Kirby and I are both Capricorns. So.
Yeah, so we're right after
I love Capricorns. I think Capricorns are really cool. And they're right. I'm like a couple weeks off from being a Capricorn. So I really do enjoy Capricorns.
So are you a December Sag?
Yes, December 14th.
Oh my gosh, so many people born around that time frame, December like 13th through 18th. So many like very prominent, very creative people born in that time frame. So I think it's good.
My mom told me she what do you call when you like when you first have sex and have the baby? I don't even know. But she was like on St.
Patrick's
conceived me on St. Patrick's Day. I'm like, oh boy. So that must be.
Oh well, that makes a lot of sense. A lot of people were. Celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
She would always point to the apartment. She's like, this is where you were conceived. I'm like, I don't really need all that information.
Thanks, Mom. But no, amazing. Thanks. Okay, Barbie. So when we start off our episodes regularly, we have a segment called What's on Your Face? And this is just a moment where our guests can talk about a product that they're loving, maybe one or two products that you're loving. Obviously, we know that you love Becca and you're an ambassador, but if there are other brands that you might want to shout out right now, please, by all means, go for it.
Sure. I've been really on my skincare wave. You wouldn't know because I have a raging pimple on the side of my face, but I think with quarantine and all, I've been kind of not wearing as much makeup and mostly just moisturizing and, you know, lashes kind of thing. So, God, I've been using a lot of the skincare from IS Clinical. Is clinical? I don't know, but IS Clinical is good.
I say IS.
Tomato, tomato.
I've been using just anything that just makes me feel really moisturized and cute. So that's definitely a brand that I've been using for skincare. And what else have I been using? I've been like more into my hair because I started bleaching it. So hair has been a thing that I just never think about. And now I have like a little, I don't even know what the name is. I'm such a makeup person. And then with hair, I'm just like, I have no idea what this is. But I've been using just like hair oils from like Noto and, you know, kind of just trying to keep it alive. It's getting better.
We love Noto.
Noto is so good. You're the second guest I think we've had. Not in a row that has talked about Noto and how amazing Gloria is.
Yeah.
So fabulous, yeah. Fabulous.
So Barbie, you obviously are Becca Cosmetics ambassador. Can you tell us how that relationship started and what does it feel like to be a beauty ambassador for such a major brand?
Well, you know, I think when I started acting, which was not too long ago, maybe a couple years ago professionally, I was like, you know, what I really want is to merge what I really like and with a brand I really like and have like a makeup or beauty collaboration. And I think I was so stunned at how soon it happened because I've been a fan of Becca products for so long. And, you know, when they reached out to me, it was kind of just like, because it's this delicate balance of like, you don't want to promote something that you don't wear and you don't have experience with and that you don't like. So it almost felt like it was too good to be true because I've actually used Becca for most of my life, especially for highlighters and like all these things. And, you know, my experience with modeling, I have just, you know, I like know about like casting and like all these things. So I really wanted to be involved in those types of aspects of the company because what I really wanted to do was kind of my own frustrations and the frustrations of the people that were in the fashion industry at the time and how beauty campaigns were done was very exclusionary and kind of like, it was like, I was like, okay, we're still on this. Like we still need like to have like this like blonde, skinny, white, straight person doing this. And like, we have to like all adhere to that. So, I mean, for me, it was much bigger than just a makeup collaboration and liking the product was one. And I was just like, oh my God, Becca like has great products. And that's something that they've always done. And it's been very consistent for years, which, you know, is hard. I think a lot of people don't, a lot of brands don't do that. And they were also extremely open to the creative side of like casting and the, how we go about the campaigns, how we go about the messaging and what is the purpose of it, you know, because I think a lot of it can just get stuck in the kind of loop of like, just, you know, you just show up on set and that's not really what our relationship is. So it's just been really great and very like therapeutic in a way where, you know, all these people that I've known who are so great and who don't necessarily always get the same opportunities as everyone, like I could just bring them in, like my friends, you know? So it's been really great.
I love that because I think a lot of times when you do see a celebrity being attached to a brand, it is very much show up at your call time and be done and get paid the money and then move forward. But I love that you were part of the casting process. I think that's why this, you know, the campaigns that you have been working on with the brand have been exceptional. So you seem to have actually a lot of fun with makeup, which delights Sarah and I, because sometimes we get, you know, guests on and they're more skincare focused and they don't really dabble in makeup, but we love makeup. So we want to talk a little bit about it. Have you always been a beauty girl? You said you have used Becca for most of your life. So I'm assuming yes, but have you always been playful with makeup and maybe what was your first makeup memory?
Yeah. Oh my God. I think in school, it was definitely my experimental thing that I did, you know, including my outfits. Let's not forget that. I've gone through so many phases and the first time I ever wore makeup, I'll never forget it. I was very into like emo kind of culture and very like goth look. So I stole a little pencil from my mom. I like sharpened it and I just put black eyeliner all over, like up and down, and just kind of walked out and was like, what do you think? And my mom has always been so supportive of me expressing myself. And I think that's something that, you know, I'm so happy for, because some of the looks, I don't know if I would have been like, you should go to school that way. But she always was very, you know, open to me experimenting with stuff. And I was probably like 9. So I was really young. And she was just like, it looks great. You know, I think a lot of times when I was young wearing makeup to school, and it would just usually be eyeliner, because I'm just like, I'm different than the other girls. Like this is, as you can tell by my eyeliner. But I got a lot of the school itself kind of shaming me. And I remember my teacher was like, you look like you're going to the club to pick up men. And I'm like, I'm 9 years old and I'm wearing eyeliner.
So you're like, what's a club?
I literally was like, what's a club? And then the same teacher was like, you should have Bratz dolls. I'm like, I love Bratz dolls. So I've always been a beauty girl and kind of.
Who's this teacher?
Oh my God. God. PS166Q. The school I went to.
By the way, Kirby and I on a recent episode were just talking about how taking black eyeliner and wearing it both on top and heavily underneath is a rite of passage as a young person. So.
Yes, and also misusing cream eyeshadow without powder eyeshadow is definitely a rite of passage. I remember I went through my cream eyeshadow, and obviously they're like little cheapy stuff from like, you know, wherever I could. Every time I had money, I would spend it on makeup. And my grandma, I could see her, like, I remember I went to MAC and I got $50 for my birthday. I had $50 and I spent $50 on 2 makeup brushes. And she was just like, what are you doing? Like, she literally was just like, are you sure you want to spend all of your money on 2 makeup brushes? I'm like, yes. And guess what? I still have those brushes. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, it was just something that I loved. I remember I had a whole table full of makeup, and it really, my makeup style has evolved so much, and it does still, and it always did. So it just depended on my mood. And I loved wearing crazy eyeshadow looks and also lipstick. I remember I went through like a phase in high school where I was known for my lipstick. I wore a really dark purple. I think it was like Rebel by MAC. It was like that, like, you know, it was like the little dark purple. And then I would do like bright red and then bright pink. And it was like every day was a different color. So, I mean, I've always loved beauty and like makeup, and I think I still try to explore makeup too at the time, like, you know, for fun.
I'm curious, how has your fascination or love of beauty, like you said, it has evolved over time. So maybe from childhood to modeling to acting in something like Euphoria, how has your perception of beauty and the makeup you wear change?
Well, I think every time I'm in a different industry or different time in my life, what's needed is different. So with modeling, I couldn't really wear makeup because I couldn't do anything with my hair. And I started modeling at 16. So, you know, makeup was something that I didn't even bring when I traveled, because I knew when I went to work, because it was like, I was working for 2 days straight and then I go home. Right. So I think there was like a lull of like my makeup passion, because I was, everyone else was expressing makeup on me except for myself. And I think with acting and being on Euphoria, it was like, even during the process, was very collaborative, and I love working that way. I think that might be not the, sometimes it's annoying, but like I really like working that way. And with Euphoria, they were like, Kirsten and Donnie were very open to ideas, and I think that's where we really like that magic happened, was like their ideas and then whoever the character was. So like Alexa, Demi would always like, you know, she'd always bring in her like the gems. It was her who brought the gems. She's like, I want to wear this. And, you know, I would come in with like a shape of an eyeliner, which ended up being the finale look. And I was like, I kind of like eyeliner that's like this. And we just text each other like beauty, like geeks, you know, like I'd be like, look at this video. Like I remember I watched a YouTube video on like the perfect like flicked eyeliner. And I was like, cause I was trying to find and trying to show a reference of what eyeliner works for me, because it's works, everyone's so different. Like the flick has to look different on everyone. It just like, it's so, you know, everyone has a different face shape and eye shape. So I was just like, this is what works for me. And it clicked in that way. And it was very collaborative and learning. And sometimes we put something on and, you know, we were running out of time, and that's what ended up being on the TV. You know what I mean? It's just, it was a really cool experience where we either had a little bit of time, or we had all the time in the world to like create these looks. So it was really fun with that. And I've been playing with makeup more since then, just because I don't really, you know, I don't really do the same things that I used to do as a model, which was like, you know, traveling a lot and like kind of having other people's work on me. It's like my body, my brand now. So sort of like, I feel like I own my own self more, you know?
It's your identity. I was going to say, Donnie just got nominated for an Emmy.
I know.
Incredible. Hello.
I knew it. As we were doing it, I was just knew it. There's something special about this. I'm like, Donnie and Kirsten are doing something completely different.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like, I think, you know, when the show started, Kirby and I would talk about how it was just so cool how Euphoria made makeup fun again for young people, like for teenagers, like because for so long it was everyone trying to recreate these like YouTuber looks and like the Instagram brow, which are beautiful, but just like, you know, not as playful as wearing gems and like wearing a colored eyeliner. And it was just so refreshing to see that.
Well, also like women, we create our identities based on, you know, the way we look, for better or for worse. And so I think it's really interesting that, especially with Euphoria, that, you know, Donnie was able to come to you and Alexa and everybody else, and you guys had input on your characters, because like that's not normal. most people aren't allowed to give input on what they think their character should be wearing at that time. And Sarah and I, you know, we report when Euphoria first came out, we were reporting on these looks on a consistent basis because it's what people were searching for, obviously. And it was fun for us because we're so used to seeing like very, you know, bland, very controlled, minimal makeup looks from time to time. So when we finally got a show that was having fun with it, we were like, yes, finally.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting is I think a lot of the YouTube and the beauty world is so focused on like a heavy contour and kind of changing the shape of your face. And, you know, even I had an aspect of that. I'm like, girl, are you going to put a little bit more contour on me? And like the way that Donnie works is like, it's like you see your skin through the makeup. And I think that was what's really refreshing too, is just like, it's not like the no makeup look with like people who look absolutely perfect all the time and they're like, you know, whatever, which is what I came from like, or to the very specific face shape changing makeup, which I think is cool too. But, you know, Euphoria wasn't so much about the face makeup, and how it was more about like the expression, the colors, everything, which is what excites me about makeup, because I, you know, how many times can you learn to bake? Because I already know how to do it, and I know I use it too. Like if I'm going to an event, best believe I have a lot of layers of makeup on my face. But you know, I think with the camera, it's a different experience where, you know, you could see the skin texture. I mean, I have a big TV just because that's all I do is watch TV, and I just invested in one. And like, I can see people's skin textures if it's not like under a filter or under whatever. And I get watching Euphoria on this TV, I was like, yeah, like, you could see us breathing through, which I think is an interesting way to think about makeup, just because it's shifting kind of what is commonplace in makeup.
I am curious, Barbie, did you learn any tips from your castmates? Like Alexa, I know her mom was a makeup artist, or maybe from Donnie, like, would you guys trade secrets, or what is something that maybe you learned from that?
I think I never really added anything like with glue to my face. So the gems were definitely, and I have some now because I'm just like, whatever, like that's cute. And like, I'm going to embrace the euphoria look. And I didn't even think about that before. So definitely Alexa with the gems. And I remember when she brought them in and we were just like, she was using it a lot. And then we were going out like one of the weekends and I just put a bunch of them on my face as well before Euphoria makeup was really a thing. I was just like, this is fun. Like I like putting extra things on my face and like adding like accessories to the face. So I definitely learned about that. And I think with Johnny, it's like what I've learned was so much of just like how makeup works in this industry. Like, you know, like if I have a bruise on my leg, it's like, we're going to airbrush it out or something. You know, if it's not consistent with the same scene that I was in, and how tricky that is of continuity, and especially with these crazy looks, it's like, I mean, I would be in the makeup chair for hours, and we shot, let's say, the Halloween scene for, I'd say like a month. Each episode was a month, which is very, very long for an episode. So, you know, having that, the glitter crosses looking exactly the same and throughout the day of like 14-hour days is extremely hard. And you know, I also learned a lot about like lighting with makeup. Like sometimes I'd have a bright orange lip, but there's one episode where my lips are bright orange, but it doesn't look like that at all. So I was like, oh, like Donnie is thinking on what it looks like on camera rather than what it looks like, you know, in like a bright lit picture, you know? So those were really cool things to kind of understand.
I got to do a Zoom makeup masterclass with Kirsten at like the beginning of the pandemic. And it was like, we got sent all these gems that we got to play with, and it was perfect because we're all still wearing our masks. So, and like, I was always afraid to wear something so bright and colorful, but it was so much fun.
It's so fun.
Loved it.
And it kind of takes you out of yourself. I've always been a person who wears costumes, even like in my day-to-day life. Like if I'm spiraling, like you will know just by the way I'm dressed. It's usually like I'm wearing a weird hat or two hats at the same time with like, I remember actually a few years ago when I was living in New York, I did glitter tears. So I would just, there's like a picture of me with glitter tears just like spiraling outside with like a weird hat that I got from someone else. And that was just like how I walked around that day. So, I mean, makeup is so fun. And I think kind of getting yourself out of your own world and kind of looking like something different is so fun to me. Like, that's why I kind of play with hair and makeup every time I go to an event. It's like something completely different, which I may need to hone in a little bit on, but
no, like, absolutely not. So Barbie, you started your career as a model, and at that time you sort of became this poster child for the body positivity movement at such a young age. And, you know, like Time named you one of the most influential teenagers, and you yourself were still so young. Can you tell us like what that felt like to have such influence over so many people at such a young age and like being the face of such an important movement?
I think when I was 16 and I started modeling, all I did was like, I'm all for American Apparel, right? And I worked at the store and I went to high school. So my life was very much normal. I was getting like $20 to model. You know what I mean? It was like literally that, you know? So it was just, that was just the company at the time, right? So for a long time, that's pretty much what I did. And by long, I mean until I was 18. So not very long. And then I started working with artists, and I started posing for paintings, or, you know, kind of my friends who were visual artists would like make blankets of me crying, like Petra Collins, and like an Art Basel just be a blanket of a photo booth picture of me crying, a real one that I was actually crying in. And we just happened to all have like this, like, at one point, I don't know why, but on photo booth, I had thousands of pictures of me crying all the time. And one day she asked me, and I was like, you know exactly that I have these pictures. So I sent her. So it was very kind of like art-based and kind of like my friends and kind of just posing for them or helping them out or doing shoots for magazines that artists primarily, but then also photographers, mostly Petra at the time, was that. So, I mean, it felt interesting because I was living in Jersey. My mom moved back to New York at 17. So we both did. And then I moved out at 18. And then I just started traveling, and I don't think any of it hit me, you know? It's like, it was a weird thing of just being constantly on the go. It was like, at one point, it was just like, I was working every single day and like having to be in a different country every day. And I think the pressure, it both made me love myself. Like, I did not really think I was attractive before I started modeling. And I actually was going through a lot of like body insecurities and just eating problems and like, just couldn't be at peace with myself ever in my life since I was a very young kid. And I think that's just from what I've observed and from like bullying and from people making comments and all this stuff. So it was an interesting thing where I felt like I was birthed, like when I started modeling, because it just was a different person. You know, I wouldn't even wear, God, I was modeling like, you know, like high-waisted shorts and stuff. And I wouldn't even wear high-waisted stuff because I was so scared of my body being shown and like always worn things that were really big. But it forced me to kind of reckon with the fact that I look like this and I deserve it, but I deserve like being in these things, but also how there aren't many people that do this. So it was a weird way. When I first modeled, my first picture that came out, it was like thousands of people with their opinion on my body. And I was 16, so I couldn't really wrap my head around it. And it was really tough. And my decision was to be the toughest person in the world and continue doing it. But it was not easy. It was a constant, you know, battle. And also being in that industry where you're so discardable, but also not, it's just a weird kind of feeling. I think I started when I first started modeling, I was on the thinner side too. So I feel like a lot of the praise that I got was because I was like a size 10 and like, and a lot of the bigger women weren't having the same attention. And it was, but I was caught up in it. So I was always talking about body positivity and I really believed it. And I still believe to it in a certain degree other than the commercialized version of it. But it was something that was very part of my life because it was almost like it was, that title was given to me. Like I couldn't work unless I was a plus size model, obviously. So to me, it was like a movement that wasn't centered around people who looked like me, but it meant something to see someone in a campaign that was even a little bit different than what they usually do. Because at the time, it was really hard. There was like an Italian Vogue cover with like Tara Lynn, and like it was like stunning, and that really motivated me. Like the little bits of things that I could find that like I could relate to, like seeing myself in, were the things that kept me going. Because a lot of things that I was doing, there have not been plus size models who did it. So it was, I was in these like weird situations where it's like these very mean fashion people. And and like, I'm like the only one who is not a size zero and fits into a sample. So it was weird. It was weird. And I kind of had a greater understanding of the problems in the industry and how it's not just body size, because there are, it was easy for me to do certain things. And it's not easier for people who are actually plus size who are models to do it. And now I'm fully like a size 14, 16, and I can really reflect on it and be like, you know, what was I doing? But what were people allowing me to do? You know, more of that stuff. And I think body positivity is a thing that had really great intentions and really was something that connected me to a lot of the plus size model community. And like, we were all like a team, and we were also excited for each other, because seeing someone do something means that boundary has been broken and thus it's open for other people. But I think there's so many layers to it. I mean, when I was modeling, I would see things that were just so blatantly racist and blatantly only because someone was a plus size model who is Black. You know what I mean? And like some girls have to bring in a suitcase and like of like their makeup and their hair and like their products, because no one is required to know how to do everyone's hair. People are only required to do certain people's hair. So it was something. And then I started talking about that too and kind of unpacking what the fashion industry is and like what the idea of beauty is, and how even me being within that community, I was the thinnest, whitest, and most like a straight size model from like my shoulders up. You know, it's like I got away with a lot more than a lot of other people could. And I think that started really resonating with me when I started becoming friends with everyone in the community. So I think there's just a lot of problems that are layered and that we don't discuss, and that we just kind of, and then a lot of people also use it for like selling things. I mean, how many times have I been in a campaign where I'm the only one who's a plus size model and the clothes barely mm-hmm. fit me and I'm not actually plus size? So it's like, and I've gotten a whole lot of people critique that as well. And I think that's completely valid to this day. I'm like, that was a very valid concern. You know, I, for one, was just trying to make some money, but at the time I was literally just a working model. Trying to make my rent. So I knew what I was doing and kind of would speak about it after. And that also got people a little bit, people were a little I was a little bit too transparent, I think, with the fashion industry, but it worked out, which is great.
No, I love that you were transparent. And I think, you know, you talked about just fashion in general. We actually have this question, you know, would you say that the beauty industry is more inclusive than the fashion industry, or is there still a long way for the beauty industry to go?
I think honestly, just now am I seeing beauty campaigns like Becca's, where it's not mostly the same person and then a tokenized other person. You know what I mean? So I think fashion has been more inclusive because there are more people of color who are designers and who run things, not necessarily, let's say, the most of like the really like high end big money companies. You know, obviously they still have problems, but like the indie designers and the people that people really resonate with, I think with beauty is more complicated because you have to, it's like a big, big business instead of making gorgeous, you know, clothes and stuff like that. So I do think the fashion industry is better. I mean, who's to say, but I think the beauty industry is kind of lacking behind because, I mean, to this day, most of the campaigns I see are kind of, you know, similar to what I've seen in the past couple decades.
Well, we just talked to an esthetician and she founded a company called Clur, and she was saying, you know, like when Black Lives Matter happened back in June, a lot of brands were shocked that their audience was like, how could you align with Black Lives Matter? And it's like, well, you've only been catering to white people for the past 20, 30, 40 years. So what else did you expect? So I think Sarah and I, you know, we deal with this a lot where we're like, is this brand really trying to do their best in terms of inclusivity? Or is it a performative thing? And I think the only way to really tell will be like the test of time and see if this is a consistent thing that they're working on and that they're talking about and they're actually changing within their marketing, within their products that they sell, where they sell, who they hire, and things like that.
Or is it just performative?
Yeah, I think that's a big thing. And I think working with, I think voting with your dollar has a lot of power. And I think people are starting to really realize that. I think a lot of people are so small-minded. I was actually watching, my mom recommended me to watch A Perfect 14, which is this like documentary. And it focuses on like Ellie Mayday, who actually passed away last year, but she was a plus size model. And they're just following a few plus size models. I thought it was very interesting. And they did, it was in 2013 when they interviewed a couple of editors at magazines. And there was one, I forgot what magazine it was, but she was simply like, in 2013, so this is like before I started modeling, really when the industry was kind of coming to like a turn of like the time, she was like, well, people only want perfection and this is a business. And like, we can't sell, people won't, it won't sell if we do something different, you know? And I think what we're starting to realize in 2020, or, you know, in the past few years, is that people are sick and bored, frankly, of like the fantasy we're sold, and people want to see, and now that people know that it's an option to see people like them in these kind of things, it like just elevates, you know what I mean? Like people now are aware of it. And like, even if you're a business who is money, who thinks only about money, whatever, you know, I can't relate to those people. But if they are just on a simple like business note, it's like, it is less, you spend more money not catering to people, you know what I mean? Like, you, especially with like, I mean, in that documentary, it goes into kind of like the logistics of plus size clothing lines. And it also they interviewed the student who asked her school, her fashion school, if she could have a plus size final. Like, she was going to try to do a plus size line for her final, and they said no. So it's just, we have to just rearrange from the very bottom of how we make clothes, how we market things, all the way to the top. If everyone has to take a bit of responsibility of it, it's not just one person who has all the responsibility to it, because that's not how it works, because, you know, that's just not how the society has been built for so long. So it is a complicated thing. And I think if it's a choice, it's an active choice to cater to people and not just what we've been taught is fashion and beauty. And I think that choice is almost like a no-brainer. It's like, how do you exclude? I mean, the average person in the United States, the average woman is a size 14, 16. So it means the average woman can't go into a, you know, whatever it is, whatever store it is, unless they're, you know, it's specifically plus size. And plus size, the plus size industry is like billions of dollars. It's like just, and we have like five things to pick from. It's like, you know what I mean? And that's the kind of the problem. And you know, I also saw this one person on Instagram. She posted, they posted this like meme where it's like, what plus size brands give us what plus size, what we want. And it's like, it was like a really cool, like leather pants, like leather, like jacket kind of look, like very cool. And like, you know, it's like the thing is there's no resources. And the only reason for that is because they don't want that type of person, quote unquote, to buy their stuff. So it's really just at the end of the day, it's like, do people care or they don't, you know, it's, and voting with your dollar is really powerful.
I think to your point too about money and in terms of beauty, one of our fellow beauty editor friends, Maya Allen, was being interviewed and speaking about how, you know, last year, and I'll probably mess up the statistic, but in, generally speaking, Black women spent more money on beauty than non-Black women. And so purely from like a money standpoint, like if you are not catering to Black women, then you are missing out on making money.
Yeah.
And I know that is also true for Asian women. Like globally, I think they spend like the most money on beauty as well. And, you know, to think that like there are still brands that I'm not even, you know, I'm tan, but I'm not that dark. And like I can't find shades, you know, like my shade in a foundation with some brands is just, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Why do we need 35 vanilla shades? I mean, that's like, like, I still, you know, it's like, I feel like if I even get a little bit tanner or a little bit paler, I have a shade with the exact undertone that I need when it's, and then there's like three dark tones. And I think that's what I really love about Becca is that they've always had a really, really large shade range. And that was, is something that, I mean, with any brand that I work with, like that's something that's really important is just like, are you only marketing towards white people? Like, is this what you're doing? Is this what we are like as people like putting out into the world? And you know, it's weird out here. It's a lot of things that you wouldn't even know underneath and like what their excuses for it are. And they all are at the end of the day, just ignorant. And it's like, people don't want to put the extra effort in. And the only reason for that is because they don't want the their consumer to be not the specific person. So I think it's just holding brands accountable for that, because it's taking active steps to being racist. So like, what is the thing that we're not understanding here, you know? And thankfully people are loud and people are screaming at people. And I think that's absolutely necessary. It's an interesting thing that people are just waking up to now, when I think people have been saying the same thing for so long. But I'm all for holding people accountable, holding brands accountable for their things. And I think this is really helpful, and kind of people are at least now thinking more, you know, rather than too, I mean, it's a little too late, but it's at least that's happening. I'll give it that.
Barbie, I have a question. Do you follow Gabby Fresh?
Yes, I do. Do I? Yes. I know Gabby.
So on Twitter a couple days ago, she retweeted this tweet from a brand that shall not be named, but it's like a photo of a girl wearing like a, she's obviously like a size 0 or size 2. She's wearing this extremely long, oversized blazer. It's like, come on. And so I pulled up the tweet. She's like, when brands say it's too expensive to add plus sizes because of the amount of fabric it takes and then make shit like this. It's like, okay, so you really actually are only catering to one type of person.
Yeah. And then they're like, well, having inclusive sizing is very expensive. I'm like, then why are you starting at a size 0? I mean, how many people are a size 0? That is, it's like how many, teenagers, like people who are small, like those are rare, as that is rarer than having someone who's a size 14, right? So if you're starting at a 0, then you're already, or an extra small, it's like, whoo. And you're only, and you're stocking up on the extra small, you know, you have like hundreds and you only have a couple of the XLs. It's like, that to me doesn't make sense as a person in a business, because you could be starting at a 4 or a 6 and then going up to a size 20 or 22. And even if you're limited, it's like, why are you in that side of the scale rather than in the middle?
When you know that there are more women in the country who will shop the plus sizes. Oh, so frustrating. Okay, so the reason you are here on the podcast today is because you are the face of Becca's new product, the Becca Zero No Pigment Virtual Foundation, which we have. We've both tried it. Kirby loves it, adores it, is going to wear it all summer, she says. But we both agreed that it can be a little confusing to explain to people like what it, who haven't tried it, like what it actually does and what it is. So can you tell us in your own words, like what does this product do?
Yeah. So I've actually, this is interesting to me because, you know, a lot of people are used to a very pigmented foundation, right? So I think when you talk to beauty people, that's not necessarily what they want. They want something more pigmented. They want something a little bit more. So I think this product, and I've noticed this with even my own girlfriend, my friends who don't usually wear makeup, I think it's this amazing kind of like blurring, but a pore filling and just like line filling thing, like just, and it's also a great texture and, you know, it stays on all day. And it's amazing for people who are scared of foundation or even people who, you know, want something a little bit better as a primer. So for me, it's like, I don't wear foundation, right? So I wear the Becca Zero because I can layer concealer on it. I can layer blush on it and I don't have to put on a pigmented foundation because it just doesn't work for me like that. And a lot of my friends who, you know, want to step into makeup, but they don't necessarily want to look like they're wearing makeup, but it gives you this like blurred matte look. It's like really, but also in a shiny, it's like it hits the bones the correct way. And I think this product is really great for people who don't want to wear a pigmented foundation all the time. If you want a pigmented foundation, this may not be like the thing that is going to like completely take away your breakouts, your you know, whatever, but it does smooth out the color. So for people like me, like my girlfriend who doesn't wear any makeup, you know, it's just like it's something that's really interesting. And like my manager who doesn't wear any makeup, he was like, this is so cool. And like, I can just put this on, go to a meeting. And like, I don't feel like I have to, you know, like when foundation kind of settles in or any of that, it just like gives mm-hmm. you, and it makes you look like you're like have a filter on. Like, I just remember when Elle was putting it on, my girlfriend, and she walked down the hallway and I was just like, you look like you're glowing. You know, it just looks like she is kind of like, it just kind of blurs your face, which is what, you know, filters do, a lot of those pretty filters. So it was like, that's the best way I can explain it. It's like a pretty filter on you, and it, you know, you can layer things on top of it. You can just wear that. And I think it's such a cool product for, I mean, cause I don't really like pigmented foundation for every day. So I think it's a really cool product, especially the highlight. I think the highlight gives that glass skin kind of look that I think I'm always trying to search for without it being sticking to my hair. That's also a problem. I used to wear like basically Vaseline on my face and then have like my hair sticking to my face like all the time and getting greasy. So it's just like one of those things where it's like a simple product that really works for people who want that. You know what I mean? And I know a lot of people are like saying like, is it a primer, is it a foundation? I'm like, it's a foundation because it's not meant to be, you know, something you put underneath makeup, but it can be used as like a canvas, you know, it's like, it makes your skin a canvas.
Wow. I really nailed it because when I talked about it earlier this week, I literally said, technically it is a foundation because it's the first thing that you put on your face.
You did good.
But also it's not meant to be layered under anything. So that's why they're calling it a foundation, not a primer. So I feel like I should be getting like, I should pat myself on the back because I really nailed that messaging. I did a great job. I personally love it too, Barbie. And I think nobody's really, I mean, I know some people that are going full glam in social isolation, which that's great. I've done it a few times. But for me, like you're looking at me, I just got out of the shower. My hair is wet. I put on Becca Zero, the no pigment foundation. I put a little bit of concealer where I needed it. And then I have on the highlighter lip. And I'm good to go. But what I love about it is I am super oily in my T-zone. And I feel like with this, I don't have to apply powder every couple of hours and I'm getting super shiny. It does that nice blurring effect and it kind of keeps your, it's not matte like you said, because there is like a nice glow to your face, but it still keeps you from having to over powder, which I am very thankful.
Yeah, I'm a sweaty girl. Like I don't have oily skin, but I have the worst face sweat in the world. And like, that to me, it just it changed the game, you know, because I'm like, I don't want like a, you know, a drip of foundation that looks like my like beige down my face. You know what I mean? So I think it's like it's a product that I've never seen before. And it serves a purpose that I don't think anything else serves that purpose. You know what I mean? It's like one of those like, oh, you hit the nail on the head of like exactly what I needed to either put underneath a little concealer, maybe a little blush, maybe not. And also it doesn't like start, you know, creasing, and it's not something that I have to actively kind of, you know, it doesn't oxidize, it doesn't do any of that stuff. So for me, it's like, it's a miracle product. It really is. And I think for people who are seeking that, which I think a lot of people are, but are not necessarily the beauty world, you know, because people like to express themselves in whatever way. And usually it's like with a lot of makeup, it's like it's serving a purpose for people who don't want to wear foundation and who don't want to wear pigmented foundation.
I'm a sweaty girl too, so this speaks to me.
Yeah, it's sweaty. It's sweaty girl approved.
I feel like this product is actually kind of catering a little bit more to Gen Z. You're like on the cusp of like young millennial Gen Z, right?
Yeah, I'm a grandfather okay. Gen Z. I always think of the grandparents of Gen Z. I was there for MySpace, but I was also there for Tumblr. It's just, you know, it's, I was definitely like, I'm like the oldest Gen Z can be, December 14th, 1996. So it's like, I can see both sides, but I definitely lean towards Gen Z because yeah, I'm like an internet kid at heart.
Totally. So would you say that your, you know, fellow Gen Z comrades are like more prone to showing off their natural skin with imperfections versus people that are maybe millennials?
Yeah, I think this, the beauty standards have just completely changed where perfection is almost boring. I like growing up in New York, it's like perfection was like, if you're perfect looking, like we're going to bully you. You know, it's like, we don't like you. You know, it's like the imperfections are really what make people like exciting and beautiful. And like, I grew up like that. My, like the people I hung out with were like the people that, you know, it's like body hair, facial hair, breakouts, everything is very much out there. And it's like, because we're so sick of being like, no one does this. No one has pubic hair. I'm like, okay, shut up. Like, stop lying to us. We're just like, everyone's been lying to us about everything. And I think that's really what the movement is just like, you don't really care how other people perceive you. And the right people will know how great you are, you know? And I think that's kind of, I mean, I see some Gen Z people who like purposely look like dorkier or something just on purpose. I mean, that's like, everyone I knew, including myself, it's like you, it's just like it's a counterculture to beauty that is now kind of the beauty world, you know? And I think it does cater to that in the sense where, you know, if someone is rejecting the idea that they have to like cover up every single part of their face to look acceptable for the day, then yeah, that's definitely it. And if your version of that is wearing all the makeup in the world and like, you know, that's also extremely valid. And I think there's both of those things at once and like happening all around. So yeah, I think it's definitely a great product for that. And I also think it's a great product for like, even like dads. I keep saying that, but it's like, I just feel like anyone who's afraid of makeup, who just wants something to, it's like a good like initial start, you know, people who are like, makeup is not for me, it's whatever, whatever. It's like, well, just try this, you know, like it just, this is kind of the effect of makeup without all of the pigment and the need for like skill and for blending and yada yada.
You talk a lot about mental health, obviously. And recently on Instagram, you posted a selfie with a caption that said that amidst the world that is, you know, falling apart, you like to use makeup as a defense mechanism. And then you also posted a picture of you in like a wig, and you were talking about how, you know, that's how you can tell you're spiraling. You're like trying on different looks.
You clocked me on my spiral.
can you talk a little bit more about what that means, like using makeup as a defense mechanism and fashion? And have you been doing that a lot in quarantine? Because it's been very stressful.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Like, I will wear a wig and like crazy makeup if I'm feeling like, you know, insane. I think it's something about like, I tried on a lot of different hats as a kid because I couldn't find myself as an individual. And I think to this day, I think really no one is one thing. So it just expresses different like aspects of me that kind of deflect myself from my own problems, you know? So during quarantine, yes, I've been playing with makeup. I like to play, I mean, I've been mostly just wearing like sweatpants, my like literal like Amazon Prime sweatpants that I wear every day, and they have holes in them all over. But you know, it's like for me, when I do like go to the grocery store or something, it's like I put on the other day I put on like a boots for the first time in like months, and I was just like, I'm wearing real shoes, not my little slides. And it's like it's small victories because you, I'm so used to like, I at one point this week I'm going to have to put on an outfit and go somewhere and do a business meeting or casting, you know, all these things, or like you know, an audition where I have to look specific ways. So it's kind of just like I almost like lose myself, and I don't know if that's what's happening with a lot of people, but in quarantine, I feel like I've just been with so much more of like my internal self than my external self. And I've almost been like not thinking about my body and my face as much, which is really great, because I think going from modeling to acting, it's only gotten worse, to be honest. I feel like with more attention is more attention on my body and myself and my looks and the way I look. And every look I have is like, it's a meme or people love it. It's like either or, you know, there's no in between. It's a meme or people love it. So it's kind of like this weird thing where every time I step out of the house, I'm like, are people going to judge me for the way I look? And now, I mean, no, I do not think that way. So I am pretty much wearing like my Ravenclaw shorts and like some like weird, like I have my Animal Crossing shirts too. It's just with the mask on, I feel really like liberated to like, especially since I live in LA, it's like moving here. Yeah, it's just, there's a little bit of like a judgment on what I wear sometimes or how I look. So it's been fun to just play outside of that and kind Absolutely. Of just be myself, you know?
I think one thing that you would love, have you heard of a Bluestone sun shield?
No.
It's this, I feel like I talk about this product all the time on this podcast, but literally it's a visor and it looks like you are in Daft Punk. It protects you from UV rays.
And it goes down to like here, like it's like fully.
And so it covers your whole face. So it's great if you're going somewhere and don't want to be recognized and you can see through it. And so like if I'm laying out and I want to protect my skin, like I wear that, I'll go walking, you know, for a little jaunt around the neighborhood, and people are so perplexed by it. They stare at you, but like they don't know, like they have no idea who's behind the mask. It's great. It's like the Masked Singer in real life.
Oh yeah. And also like if I've noticed this too, it's like if you go outside in like a big outfit that called attention to yourself, that also is like, there's either or. It's like either, like if I'm like looking exactly like this and going somewhere, no one's gonna know who I, like literally no one's gonna ever guess that, like even whatever. But it's like if I put on like a dress and like some nice shoes, people in LA specifically will like look at you and try to find like, where do I know her from? Is that someone? Is that an influencer? Is that a YouTuber? You know, like people, I've gotten people ask me like, I love your YouTube. And I'm like, I like walk
They're on
by.
Their phones.
And I'm like, thanks. I said, thanks. I was just like, wait, I don't have a YouTube.
You're like, okay, I guess I got to start
LA culture is hilarious.
LA is so whack, but I love it here. I would never leave.
I love it here. I'm staying put here because New York is like, Good. It's a different way, but it's still similar. I feel like people tend to give New York like this whole, like you could be super different. It's like only if you're in the realm of the cool different, you know what I mean? So I think LA is great. I do.
How long have you been here in LA now?
2.5 years.
Ooh,
oh, yeah. Welcome.
We started shooting Euphoria because I moved for the second up the well not the pilot but like the rest of it, so yeah,
we're glad you stayed.
I'm here.
Okay, this is the last question, Barbs. Okay, what is your go-to beauty look that makes you feel most beautiful?
It depends, but right now I love having lashes. So I love a lash extension because that just takes away a lot of, I think I have really dark eyebrows and kind of soft features. So my eyes are kind of deep set. They get lost in there. So I like a little princess lash, you know.
Same.
Love a princess lash.
I just got them filled.
Yeah, me too. I'm like, I need my little lashes. That's what I need. Like, I don't care about my nails. I don't care about anything. Like, my nails literally look like this all the time and, like, just disgusting, like, chipped nail polish.
Mine are, like, being picked. It's so
yeah,
gross.
But for me, lashes just change. Even if I – lashes just change the game. And I think I've been using a lot of Becca Zero in this moment just because I don't really – and if I – even then, I'll, like, if I want to do something cute in my eyes, I'll, like, put a little shimmer eyeshadow or something. But a little blush, a little pink blush, I like a little pink stuff. And, yeah, just, like, really glassy look. That's really my go-to right now because I like to wear my glasses a lot, too, when I'm not working. So – I almost feel like the glasses, even though it doesn't do it, it just like completely, like the eyes, I'm like, I'm not going to do anything with my eyes because no one can see it through my glasses. But and I have colorful glasses too. But like a little shimmer on the eye, never hurt. And yeah, lashes, that's it.
Kirby is born with like lashes up to her eyebrows. So we are both like, yes, very obsessed with our lashes.
Okay.
So. We're lash girls. So I feel you on that.
Someone's blessed.
She is. She really is.
My lashes just go straight. That's the problem. They don't curve up.
Same. Mine go down. They go straight and down.
Yeah, that's why I gotta get my lash permed up, you know?
Before we let you go, Barbie, do you have any news on Euphoria? Like, are you guys going back to film at some point? Like, obviously, like, nobody's filming anything. You're like, let me stroke my chin.
Yeah, we are at some point going to shoot season two. I don't know. It's a very complicated show. There's a lot of people involved. It's cinematography heavy. We can't do it with like a skeleton crew. So I think in order to have the best season two that really looks like season one, is as high production value as season one, we have to make sure we're all in the clear, because it's going to be 300 people, you know, doing stuff, and we don't want to compromise that. And we don't want to, like, no kissing on set. Like, like, that's,
oh my
that's,
God.
That's a stretch.
Euphoria without the intimate yet. Yeah, no, not the same. No, show.
It's a stretch. So I think at one point it's going, I mean, it's 100% going to happen for sure, but I don't know if it's going to happen. I mean, it's not going to happen this year. So it's not coming out this year. So
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. I mean, it's such a bummer, but obviously we know why. So it'll be worth the wait.
It'll definitely be worth the wait. And I think that will give it, if we have it also takes 8 months to do it. So I think it's just, or like around there, to give or take, but it's just like, it's a big project and it takes most of the year. So just be aware of that, I guess, for most people. They're like, when is it coming out? Is this from season two? I'm like, we're still in coronavirus. There is still a pandemic. It is record highs right now. Like, that is not happening at the moment.
Totally. Barbie, thank you so much for your time and spending an hour with us today.
This was so fun.
We loved meeting you. Obviously, we wish it was in real life. But one of these days, once we're out of Rona, we hope that we can see you and have you back on the show.
I would love that. Aww, I love talking to you guys. Thank you.
Aw, thanks, Barbie. Everyone, thank you so much for listening to Los Angeles. You guys know where to find us, at Los Angeles Pod on Instagram and Twitter, and find our website, www.losangelespod.com. Like, subscribe, and leave us a review. And we'll talk to you next week.
Woohoo!
Woo! Yay!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.